This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Technology on the farm is advancing all the time. GPS helps farmers plant more efficiently. Equipment communicates with computer data to determine where and when it's best to use chemicals and so on. The most recent tech starting to be used on farms is a drone. With the right sensors, drones can check on crop pests, check on soil moisture, and even look at plant growth in a more standardized way than a spot check by a farmer. Here to talk about how drones are used and might be used on the farm in the future is Robert Goodwin. He's a senior geospatial analyst at Michigan State University's Department of Geography, Environment, and Spatial Sciences. Welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
So drones have become popular for these overhead videos and still photos and even news coverage. How common is it for drones to be used in agriculture?
Drones in agriculture are becoming extremely common. Basically, drones have taken off in various places of agriculture, primarily cash crops right now.
And what do you mean by cash crops?
By cash crops, I mean corn, wheat, soybeans. But more often now, they're being used for other specialty crops. In Michigan, we are one of the most diverse states, agriculturally speaking. So we have things like grapes for wine and juice. We have peaches. We have all sorts of different fruits and all sorts of different agriculture, truck crops and whatnot that we can use drones for.
What's the most common way they're being used right now?
Most commonly for plant health, I would say. We have specialized sensors called multispectral sensors that allow us to look at the greenness or the health of certain plants. So that's the primary focus right now. Farmers will generate something called an NDVI or Normalized Difference Vegetation Index. And that's sort of the standard way of looking at the differences of health in a field, whether that's from disease, whether it's from pest, fungus, whatever.
So what does it actually read? What data does it collect that actually helps the farmer determine the health of a plant?
So the cameras that we use, they record energy in different bands. Typically, the bands that are important are the red band and the near-infrared band. We can see in the red, you know, we can see visible light as humans, but we can't see out into the near-infrared. Fortunately, plants are reflective, highly reflective in the near-infrared. And the differences between the red light reflectance from a plant, which is consumed by chlorophyll, you know, red reflectance in a plant is very low in a healthy plant. So it's absorbing a lot of the red light. At the same time, it's reflecting a lot of the near-infrared light. And these differences, as chlorophyll decreases, red light reflectance will increase, yet near-infrared light reflectance will stay fairly high. And when we ratio those bands, we can determine small differences in plant health.
Let's talk about some of the limitations. I mean, it takes training to use a drone. There are limitations by the FAA as far as how they're used. And the technology still has some limits in the amount of weight a drone can handle and how long it can stay in the air. Let's start with the training. How common is it for farmers to get the training right now?
I think it's still relatively uncommon for farmers themselves to get the training. There's a lot of thought out there that it's my farm, I don't need the training, although it is the right path and the legal path. But there's a lot of crop service companies and a lot of vendors out there that are sort of filling in that gap to actually do the flying. I think it'll increasingly become more common for farmers to do it themselves. But you think of farms and the sizes of farms these days, and they would have to employ people full-time just to do flying in a lot of cases.
Yeah, how much of a financial incentive right now is there to buy yet another piece of equipment and hire someone?
Well, exactly. I mean, the return on especially cash crops is pretty low. And so farmers are looking at this as a cost per acre. And if that cost per acre gets too high, then it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to invest in it. But a lot of that depends on the capabilities of the aircraft. So right now, aircraft can only fly anywhere between, say, 15 and 40 minutes. If you're talking about a quadcopter or some other multi-rotor aircraft, they can fly longer if it's a fixed wing, but still not cover large, large areas like maybe a manned aircraft can.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the possibilities of these drones right now. Is the industry adjusting as the potential for greater use by more industry and agriculture is happening? Are they making adjustments to these planes, and what are their limitations in the technology right now?
Certainly. There's sort of parallel technological improvements occurring right now. Battery chemistry is a big one, and obviously that's more important than just for drones. Autonomous vehicles and that sort of thing, electric vehicles rather, are, you know, very dependent on battery chemistry. So as battery chemistry improves, that'll improve the efficiency and the endurance of our drones. fixed wing can be a problem because it's more difficult to take off and land, but there is a new technology that's sort of becoming more common, is vertical takeoff and landing planes, where a plane will stay in the air much longer than a rotorcraft because it has airfoils and it wants to fly. It can fly. Without the use of those, it can at least glide, so it's more efficient. But taking off and landing has always been sort of difficult. So we now have vertical takeoff and landing planes. It takes off vertically, transitions to horizontal flight, flies for a very long time, and then on its way back, it transitions back into a vertical landing and comes down automatically. So that plane can fly for anywhere from 30 to 40 minutes, which is usually a little bit longer than rotorcraft. More importantly, it can fly faster. So we're talking about with a rotorcraft flying for 30 minutes at the maximum height allowed by the FAA, you might fly for 30 minutes and cover 80 acres. Whereas with this plane, you could cover 300 to 400 acres. And that's a game changer for especially cash crop farmers when you have fields that are a mile square or larger.
You mentioned the FAA restrictions that can limit the use of a drone. What are some of these restrictions? You mentioned altitude. What other restrictions are there? And are any of them being loosened anytime soon?
The altitude is actually the least important right now, in my opinion. The most important regulations that are sort of limiting are beyond visual line of sight and flying over people not involved in the operation and also flying over moving vehicles. Obviously, there's safety concerns with those, but if there's going to be large-scale agricultural acceptance of drones, using these beyond visual line of sight is important. And right now, you can apply for a waiver from the FAA to get that, but it's a bit of a process and you aren't guaranteed to get it. And if you're flying anywhere near urban areas or close by even small airports, it's likely you'll be denied.
Well, there's a big company who's wanting to change a lot of those rules. The farmers might be getting some help from somebody like Amazon or other delivery services.
Certainly. I was at a presentation at a GIS conference and there was a gentleman talking about just that. If he solves the problem for package delivery, because package delivery will require beyond visual line of sight, it'll solve the problem for everybody. So if the economics work there and they can convince the FAA that this loosening will help out that industry, then it'll only reap benefits for everyone else.
You're holding workshops to not only show farmers how to fly drones, but also to use data collection and geographic data analysis so that drones can actually do something useful beyond having an eye in the sky. How's that being received?
Pretty well. As far as I know, we're the only ones right now offering drone training where we actually not just teach the people how to fly the drone, because that's, to be perfectly honest, the easy part of the equation, but we're teaching people how to process the data and then even more importantly, analyze the data in geographic information systems so we can start creating reference data that goes back into things like precision agriculture. It's one thing to get up and fly a drone. It's an entirely another thing to derive useful information from that drone.
So we've talked about a lot of developments that might be coming. What do you think is the next big development that might be most helpful for farmers thinking about using drones to get some good information about their crops?
Right now, we're doing some research with some professors at Michigan State University in plant, soil, and microbial sciences, Addie Thompson, Eric Olson, Marty Chilvers, and some others that are looking at things like phenomics. And we're using LIDAR instruments, which are laser scanning techniques to build topographic surfaces and plant characteristics information, and also hyperspectral imagery, which is looking at not just a few bands of energy in reflectance, but looking at hundreds of different bands reflected in different areas along the spectrum. And that technology is very expensive right now, but as that matures a little bit more on the drone side, we'll be able to look very specifically at plants, say one plant from another, and say that's phosphorus limited or that is nitrogen limited or that's got a fungus. Right now, that's a little difficult with the broadband multispectral data that we're using right now.
I noted in an article you wrote that some farmers might get better benefit from it now than others. For example, row crop farmers might not find it as useful as, for instance, Christmas tree growers. Why would Christmas tree growers have a better advantage using drones?
Right now, what they want to know mostly in the Christmas tree community is where are their trees, how many trees they have, where they are, and how tall they are. And with drones right now, it's a fairly straightforward exercise along with some GIS processing to locate a georeference point for every tree. So that's your count. And then also extract the height And if they know the height, they know how many 7-footers they have, how many 8-footers they have. They can plan their harvests. They can do all sorts of things. Where back in the farming, it's a little more difficult to say, okay, if I fly over this cornfield and I see areas that are not as healthy as others, we're not exactly sure why that is. In most cases, you don't know exactly why that is. You actually have to go in the field and say, oh, okay, it's not healthy because there's a fungus, or it's not healthy because there's corn rootworm. It's not healthy because it's nitrogen limited. But you don't know that strictly from the imagery at this point. You have to sort of guess. Now, a farmer will know generally how their field is reacting, you know, what's going on in their field at any one time. But it's harder. It's a harder exercise. Whereas with Christmas trees, it's like, well, we're just doing counts and we're doing heights, and they can get a lot of benefit out of that.
Robert Goodwin is a senior geospatial analyst at RS&GIS, a research and outreach group within the Michigan State University Department of Geography, Environment, and Special Sciences. Thanks very much.
Oh, thanks for having me.